When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Make some noise. It's Making Monsters with Taylor Dahl. It's like beer and brats, a perfect combination.
You know the deal.
All right, welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Making Monsters. Taylor Dahl here, and football season's here. And we've got a really fun guest, Robert Mays. He is the host of The Athletic Football Show. And ironically enough, the NFC North podcast dropped today, Robert.
Yeah, it's good timing. It worked out very well. It's always one of my favorite ones that we do every year. So I'm glad that it could align like this.
Yeah, I love it. I'm super excited. The NFC North could be a very interesting division this year. So we will get into that a little bit, the North in general and kind of what you guys talked about on your pod. But let's talk about Caleb Williams, because I think that is the hot topic right now going into the season. Let's just get your general thoughts. Preseason so far, what you saw from Caleb, what you think you still need to see from Caleb, just some of those things.
He made like two plays a game that were absolutely spectacular. I mean, there's not much else you can ask for from that side of things. And we knew that, right? You watched him in college and he's been the number one pick in the NFL draft for like 3 years for a reason. He's wildly talented. And I think that you saw everything you'd want to see from him in those splash moments. And I think the two things that really stood out just from a physical talent perspective, and even just like a gift, how gifted he is his awareness and his flexibility as a thrower. And when you watch him just kind of toying with defenders in space and you combine it with what he can do throwing the ball on the run to his right or to his left, he just has a different skill set. He's a different sort of guy. And when you draft somebody number one overall, that's not a reach, that's like the consensus number one guy in the NFL, you hope that he has some of those special traits. And it has been really cool to see those on display, even if it's just the preseason.
Yeah, and you being a Chicago fan, you know the torture that it's been.
I sure do.
Of everything. And I feel like listening to your NFC North podcast, which, like I said, we'll get into a little bit more. You have a very similar mindset of me of we've been hurt so many times. It's kind of hard to completely buy into everything. Some things need to be proven still to us. And I think that's okay. You're allowed to be excited and still be. I keep saying I'm cautiously optimistic, and that's the best way to describe it for me. But when we're talking about Caleb, like you said, there's moments during these preseasons where you're just like, man, not many people can make these throws. And it's really fun to watch and exciting. I had friends texting me, though, that weren't Bears fans. And they're like, man, like having an offense that's counting on this guy having to kind of spin around and make some of these incredible things would also be a little stressful. And I'm like, well, that's what we've done for the past 3 years also with Justin Fields, but obviously at a different level. But one of the things that stuck out to me, and I've seen some criticisms lately, and it's more so it stemmed from a Vikings fan's like rankings that he had. And in it, he said that he wouldn't choose Caleb Williams because Caleb Williams, he doesn't have a quick release, which was weird to hear because to me, once Caleb Williams makes that decision, that ball is zipping. Maybe the time to throw is a little high. And we knew that it was at USC like that too. So explain a little bit what you're seeing with that, the difference between the time to throw, the release time, and kind of some of the things that make Caleb Williams different than what Justin Fields was.
I think to me, the biggest thing that's different between Caleb Williams and Justin Fields is that Justin Fields, let's spin it this way. If you look at the best quarterbacks in the NFL, the quarterbacks that even last year, the quarterbacks that surprised us a little bit, the guys who were better than we might've expected, the guys I would throw out there were probably CJ Stroud. Lamar Jackson was the MVP in a way that people didn't necessarily expect. Jordan Love, we didn't know what to expect from him, and now he's the highest paid quarterback in the NFL. And even a guy like Matthew Stafford, I think by the end of last season, people were like, oh man, like is Matthew Stafford like one of the five best quarterbacks in the league? Yeah. You're trying to paint a through line between all those guys. They have an ability to be creative from the pocket, right? If you look at the arm angles that they can change, what they can do off platform, what they can do kind of drifting in the pocket a little bit, the way that Jordan Love can, there's an ability to make creative plays from that condensed space. Justin Fields is not that sort of player. He's a creative player as a runner. He's an explosive player, but he's not a creative thrower. He doesn't have that flexibility in his arm that a lot of these other guys do. And you can ascribe the same traits to Patrick Mahomes, some of the other best quarterbacks in the league. Caleb Williams has that. That's like the selling point of what Caleb Williams is. So the fact that you have that creativity and playmaking from the pocket, that is a non-negotiable aspect to me of being an elite quarterback in the NFL in 2024. So even if there are some similarities, you know, some of the scrambles that we've seen holding out of the ball a little bit longer, I do think that Caleb has an upside that Justin Fields could never really realize because he doesn't have that trait specifically from the pocket.
Yeah. And I think we talk about that awareness word, and Justin Fields wanted to kind of play hero all the time. And I do think we have those moments from Caleb Williams too. He wants to be the guy to make those flashy big plays. And you mentioned it in your NFC podcast where he kind of went up to the ref after and was like, hey, you know, did you like that? And so he has fun. And that's one of the things that I love about Caleb is you can tell he's also having fun playing football, which is a whole, these guys say they love football. Not every player loves football to the same extent. And Caleb seems like he's one of those guys that it's up here on his list of things he loves. So that's fun to watch. So let's go back to this. The last preseason. So the three and out, the three straight three and outs, come to find out from Hard Knocks, the mic and the helmet wasn't working. So there was some miscommunication there. How much do you think that actually factored in? Or do you think it was just they weren't quite on the same page in general?
I think it was probably a little bit of both. I mean, when you watch the plays, I think they probably understood what the play call was. It just was a lack of execution. I mean, Keenan Allen doesn't win, you know, on that kind of little circus corner route that they had on third down. And then, you know, Caleb probably checks the ball down a little bit too quickly on that play action boot to Gerald Everett. I think it was on first or second down. Like, yeah, these are just things that happen. You know, it gets the preseason. Like, I'm not overly concerned about that sort of stuff. I want to see him just playing within structure and within on time within the offense when it calls for it, right? And so I think that there's a misconception about what kind of type of player he is, where people just think that he's always he holds onto the ball a little bit too long and he's unwilling to play within structure. I think that he's extending plays oftentimes when it's worth extending the play. That rollout where he spins to his left, that's him understanding this is where I have space. Right. Mm-hmm. This is where I have open space. And I think that he just has such an incredible awareness of where space exists and where defenders are going to be. And if you look at the way that he can navigate the pocket and even some of the stuff he's doing with like pump fakes out in space against guys on boots, like that's just stuff where he has a sense for how the game is played. And I do think that if you watch him at USC, that was arguably the biggest strength of his entire game, is that he just had an ability to navigate muddy pockets and messy situations because of the awareness that he plays with. And so I think that you have seen that consistently, even if it's been a little uneven when you think about what he's done in structure so far. I love that we're analyzing the preseason games like it's the Super Bowl. And like, I'm with you. I've done the exact same thing that we're doing here already. But the fact that we're going to like this level of granularity with games that just do not matter, I think speaks to how Bears fans are thinking about this overall.
Yeah, and it shows like the excitedness level. And it is funny because there's so many little moments from the preseason that I remember so distinctly. And like previous years, I would have never been able to break it down to this point, like to the point you just said, the pump fake. And I'm like, oh yeah, he did that to Dwan Smoot twice and he got Smoot the first time and not the second time. Like, why I remember that? I don't know. But I think one of the interesting things too, and this is why the box score people drive me nuts, but even in these games, if you look at, to me, some of the best throws we honestly saw or the best plays we saw in preseason were incompletions. We talk about the Rome in the corner where Rome was, you know, had a foot out of bounds. We talk about the Tyler Scott one that ended up being a PI. And then we talk about the one to DJ up the middle of the field. Really good play by the defensive back, but Moore ended up dropping it. 9 times out of 10, DJ Moore probably would catch that ball. So little things like that also, I think, are keeping me a little more optimistic than maybe I would have been, because I did watch these full games and I'm like, man, he's making some really good plays. And even the ones that haven't worked out look incredible.
Yeah, the accuracy has been phenomenal as well. I mean, he's putting the ball where he wants to for the most part. And even on that ugly third down incompletion on the throw to Keenan Allen, like Keenan Allen stops his route. Like, that's why that looks ugly. The ball placement, I think, has been pretty exceptional for the most part. And the DJ Moore example is a perfect one. Like, that's an incompletion, even though it's a really good throw. And I know that, you know, advanced stats are sometimes misleading and big plays can pump this up. If you look at like his EPA per dropback, for example, which is like an efficiency metric, he has one of the best in the entire preseason. Like, completion percentage is not the end all be all when you're making explosive plays on the other side of that. And sometimes that can be dangerous if you want to live in that world where it's a little bit more volatile. But I think oftentimes when you have a quarterback that's completing 56% of his passes, accuracy is one of the issues that you're worried about. That is not an issue with the way that this guy plays. And that to me is another kind of misconception about his game, is that he's not like some wild horse back there. He has really good mechanics. Like, he actually, the foundation of who he is very reliable and very sound. And I think that's why he can do some of this wild stuff that other people can't necessarily get away with.
Yeah, even the weird, I think in the first preseason game when he did the weird little flip to Khalil, maybe it was in the middle, and everybody was like, I don't know how you did it, but it happened. And then you take off and you get 15 yards out of it.
That's the awareness part of it. That is just understanding where guys are on the field. And that's just, when I watched him in college, and Dane Brugler, who does a phenomenal job covering the draft for us here at The Athletic, you know, when he was writing about Caleb before I had really studied him and we were talking about him, that's what he would go back to, is just kind of this spidey sense and this awareness of where everyone else is on the field. And, you know, that's the type of thing you just can't coach. You can't teach. That's what makes guys special. And he has that. And, you know, there were moments in that game when he makes that play where it's like, it's hard not to think about what Mahomes would do in that situation. And the gap between Patrick Mahomes and everyone else isn't just a talent gap. The gap between Patrick Mahomes and everyone else is a product of, the guy's wired differently. It matters to him. He's smart. People connect with him. He has a hunger. He has ability to kind of like twist what people say about him in this Michael Jordan-esque way to find motivation. Like, those are things that we will see. Like, that's where the gaps exist. But from a talent perspective, Caleb Williams can do things that very, very few people on this planet can do.
Yeah, I did a podcast earlier in the season with Coach DeFilippo, and we were kind of talking about some of the stuff that happened in Justin Fields' rookie season. But one of the quotes that stood out to me was that the best quarterbacks in the league, it's not a job to them, it's a lifestyle, being a quarterback. Yeah. And that just, that flashed ever since then. I was like, you really can't tell. And it goes back to conversations I cover the Jags here in Jacksonville too, and kind of the Trevor Lawrence conversation, is like, he has all of the abilities in the world, but does he love football enough to be that next, the top tier guy? And that kind of, that quote stuck out to me when it came to that. But let's talk a little bit about the weapons in general, because that's a big topic too. I was a big Roma Dunze all offseason shouting Roma Dunze. And so when it happened on draft day, I was ecstatic. But that's also Keenan Allen, Gerald Everett, and that's adding on to DJ Moore and adding on to Cole Kmet. And they add DeAndre Swift on. We'll see, we're cut day, so we'll see what all is going down when it comes to that running back room. There has been a little bit of rumors that Khalil Herbert may not be here. I don't see that happening, but maybe I'm wrong. But what are your thoughts in general about the receiving room and how well these receivers work and can do different things?
It's one of the best pass catching groups in the league, which as a Bears fan is a very strange place to be. I think people misunderstand how bad the receiver history is because they're preoccupied with the quarterback history. And we had that 2 years of Alshon Jeffrey and Brandon Marshall. That's it. Outside of like one Marcus Robinson year, one Marty Booker year. Like, these are the things that we're talking about. So going into a season where it's very reasonable that by the end of the year, Keenan Allen is the worst wide receiver on the Bears in terms of like their starting personnel in 11. That's crazy when you think about the history. And what I love about it is they definitely do have complementary skill sets. Mm-hmm. Like, they all can do a little bit of everything. And sometimes that would worry me, where you have these guys who maybe are a little bit samey in terms of the roles that they can play. Mm-hmm. But this, I don't feel that way about this group, because DJ Moore can be a vertical presence, but he can also do a lot with the ball in his hands. You know, Rome is somebody that was like a dominant downfield player a lot of times at Washington, but he's also somebody, like we saw last weekend, that can take an end around 15 yards if you put the ball in his hands. Mm-hmm. Keenan Allen is a little bit more limited than those other two guys at this stage in his career, but even if you're conceiving of him as more of a slot player right now, based on some of the physical limitations, those other two guys are so flexible that I think that it gives you a lot of optionality within the offense. So, I mean, I love it. I can't imagine a group that would be more exciting to me than this one, maybe save outside of what they have in Houston, just because those guys are absolutely monsters too.
Yeah. And to me, there's like three things that match for each of them. And when I think of Rome, I think of contested catches, because he led the college football with contested catches, and he could do a
physical player.
Very physical. To me, Keenan's kind of that route runner type of guy. He's not going to be the fastest on the field, but he's going to be able to run the routes and kind of make things work in that way. And then, like you said, when it comes to DJ, once the ball's in his hand, I remember the criticism last year in preseason, because his first catch, he was, you know, that little shovel pass to the side, and he takes it 40 yards because he's that guy that can get the yards after contact. And so those three things to me already look good. And then, like you said, then you have a DJ and Rome who can do other things. And that's not even counting, you know, some of these pieces. We've seen some good things from Tyler Scott this in the preseason, and some of these guys that are even behind them. And then you got the tight ends. And when you go in the tight end world with Shane Waldron, that's a whole different element that you're adding to the offense.
Yeah. You look at what they did over the last couple of years in Seattle, and, you know, it's kind of funny, some of the ideas that they were trotting out. A lot of it was born of just pass protection issues with that Seattle team over the last two years. But you know, you got formations where you got like three tight ends in the backfield at one time. And I don't know how much of that we'll see, but I think the staff in general does believe in the benefit of having multiple personnel groupings and what that allows you to do when it comes to dictating to a defense. And, you know, Thomas Brown, when I was in Chicago, I talked to him and Shane Waldron together, actually. And, you know, we were just talking about some of this stuff. And he's like, I believe in that flexibility with your personnel groupings and what it allows an offense to be. And they believe they have that flexibility. You know, you have Cole Kmet and Gerald Everett, who have, you know, complementary skill sets in a lot of ways. You have those three receivers. You have multiple backs that you can use. So I think that we're going to see a lot of different fullbacks play for this Bears team, depending on the situation. And the hope is just that along the way you figure out, okay, this is our best group, this is what we do best. But the early part of the season, I think, is going to include a lot of trial and error to get to that place.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
My thing. Can you hear me?
I can hear you now. Yep.
Okay. It cut out for a second. Sorry.
No worries.
But yeah, I think that it's, I know, and this is another thing, and I'll go ahead and skip to this because it made me think of it when you were doing your NFC North pod, and you mentioned Zach Robinson and kind of some of the other choices that the Bears had when they were looking at offensive coordinators this year. The one reason I wasn't for Zach Robinson is because I wanted someone who had experience play calling. I just felt like previously, like, for example, at Getsy, number one, he got to work with Aaron Rodgers, where I feel like he didn't have to do much of offensive coordinating. But then also, I just feel like it is beneficial, especially for a rookie quarterback, to have somebody who does have experience play calling. And with quarterbacks that they're trying to, you know, a Geno Smith, who they're trying to kind of bring back and find their way into the NFL. And that's why I personally really like Shane Waldron. It didn't sound like in the pod you were crazy excited about Shane Waldron.
I think that there is a temptation, and I'm very guilty of this, where the unknown becomes really attractive. And I think that when you're seeking out play callers, I think about the ceiling. I think about how good can this guy be? And, you know, there's a chance that Zach Robinson, and even if it's a remote chance, there's a chance that Zach Robinson comes in and, you know, does his best Mike McDaniel impression, where we've never seen him do this before, but man, is he a difference maker now that he's gotten that opportunity. The fact that we've seen Waldron, I think, it makes that possibility even more remote. But I completely understand that argument. We've seen him be successful. I mean, that Seattle team was a borderline top 10 offense in each of the last 2 years. I think that part of my frustration with that offense at times, I'm a Geno guy. I think Geno is supremely underrated. I think that Geno is an excellent NFL quarterback. And so the what they were asking him to do within that offense sometimes was frustrating to me, because if you look at the structure of it, it was very outside the numbers. There were a lot of high degree of difficulty throws. And I asked Shane Waldron about that when I was in Chicago. I was like, you know, you guys, when you were in LA, you had the most condensed formations in the NFL. You're really playing inside the numbers, and that's how the offense is structured. In Seattle, they played with the widest formations in the league. So I was like, why? Like, why is that? Why did that departure happen from some of the things you had done earlier in your career? And he said that it was kind of a product of the players, right? Like DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett are kind of vertical outside the numbers players. The guys he has now are more flexible than that. You can use them in more ways than that. And so I do think that some of my frustrations about what they were doing with that offense and why it could feel a little volatile at times because it was such a high wire act, I think and I hope that with a different set of players, it looks a little bit different. And you're asking your quarterback to not necessarily have to make hero throws as often as Geno was within that offense.
Yeah, and I think when we're talking about that, and that's what I have my concerns. We saw the Jackson Smith and Jigba, and when he made the comments, well, not comments, he kind of seemed like he wasn't the biggest fan of Shane Waldron in the interview that I believe it was with CHGO. But to me, I feel like maybe that's part of it, is because they did feel like they had these players who could do specific things, and maybe Jackson Smith and Jigba felt like he could do more and he wasn't being asked to do more. But when you have a guy like DK Metcalf or guys like DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett on your team, it does limit that third wide receiver opportunity to do some things. But let's switch over to the defensive side of the ball a little bit, because to me, I think there are still questions up front. I think that the pass rush to me is still a concern, but I'm very, very high on the secondary. And I think a guy like Jalen Johnson, who to me, when you look, you can check off every box of what Jalen Johnson's able to do, and he's been able to do it at a very high level. Tyreek Stevenson towards the end of last season looked like he was, I mean, really coming into his own late. And then Kyler Gordon's been able to really find himself too. So to me, that secondary, and with the addition of Kevin Byard, really has the chance to be a top secondary as long as health, everyone stays healthy. To me, and in my opinion, everyone stays healthy and the young guys continue to develop. What are your thoughts on that?
I 100% agree. I mean, I think it's such an exciting young group. Tyreek Stevenson had some really impressive flashes last year. I think that Raiders game is the first game where I was just like, okay, I can work with this. He had some moments against Devontae Adams that I think really made you kind of open your eyes. And that was fun. It was fun to see that. And I love Kyler Gordon. And I think that he's even settling into a better version of himself. I think the physicality he plays with and just the presence he's giving you on that defense, you combine that with Jalen Johnson, and it's a really good group. And even a guy like Terrell Smith, I thought, had some really good moments last year. And, you know, you're going to have to use more than those three corners. So if you can have a little bit of depth that puts you in a decent spot, if a guy's going to miss a little bit of time here or there, that's a really good place to be. And I feel that way about the safety group too. You know, Jonathan Owens was a starter last year for the Packers. So the fact that now he's your third safety, and you know, you got a decent amount of bodies back there, the back seven, I feel great about, really great about. The questions come, who's getting after the quarterback, and how does that affect the people other that have chased those guys around for 3.5 seconds?
Yeah, I know. And that's what I remember Kyler Gordon's rookie season, and people were kind of critical on him. And I'm like, the amount of field that Kyler Gordon was having to cover because there was nobody up front helping the secondary whatsoever. I remember one specific play that rookie season where, I mean, the entire end zone he was having to cover because there was just no pass rush whatsoever. And the quarterback was just sitting back there for 5 minutes, getting to go through every progression 4 times before he had to make the decision. And that puts a lot on your secondary. So I am concerned about the pass rush. I do. I am a fan. I know there's some people critical on Twitter about Jaquan Brisker. We want to see Brisker probably go back to what he was 2 seasons ago. He didn't have the best year last year. But hopefully with Kevin Byard, that kind of helps having the veteran side. We know some of the issues with Eddie, with missed tackles and some of the other things. It just wasn't prime Eddie that we had seen in 2018. I think it'll be really fun. And to your point, when it comes to even the depth of those pieces, this whole preseason, I felt like every corner made a play at some point. And then Kyler Gordon was everywhere. We were blitzing a lot too, which was kind of fun to see because I felt like last year we did not blitz at all.
Yeah, I think that may be necessary. If you're trying to manufacture a pass rush because you have concerns, like how dynamic do you want this thing to feel? And I would love to watch Matt Eberflus cook a little bit. You know, last year he takes over in the middle of the season, obviously. Now this is an entire offseason where he's gotten to be the guy at the center of that. And I, you know, when it's different, when you're the architect of the defense and when you're doing the install meetings and when you're a huge part of what that feels like. I think this is really the first year where they're going to be able to build on what they had done the year before when you consider some of the things that they were dealing with. So I'm very excited to see what that defense looks like. And you know, we said it on our show. We're talking about what success looks like for the Bears this year. I think part of that and part of the justification for keeping a guy like Matt Eberflus, this needs to be a place where you are consistently getting the most out of your defensive talent. Like, do you turn into a team like Buffalo where every single year they're a tough out? They're like the sixth to eighth best defense in the league. It doesn't really matter who's in there. You know, they are just going to be a real pain to deal with week in and week out. And that includes the depth pieces. And if the Bears can become that sort of place, I think that's what you have to be shooting for when you're betting on a guy like Matt Eberflus.
Yeah, and I think that a lot of people were critical of them keeping Matt Eberflus. I was one of the ones that was kind of like, this man had no defensive coordinator all year, an offensive coordinator that wasn't working, a defensive-minded coach trying to kind of just control everything offensively and defensively. I think it was a lot. So it will be interesting this year, a guy like Eric Washington, who obviously has been here in Chicago too. So the defenses that he runs, he definitely has a certain tone. And then Eberflus has his hits mantra, and everybody that he's signed all offseason, I feel like perfectly matches that. Even the most recent ones with Chris Williams and Daryl Taylor both have that like hits feature to what fits with Matt Eberflus. And so I think that he's finally to the point where he's built something where the players match the scheme he likes. I do think, like you said up front, there are some questions because it can't be all Montez Sweat this year. We not only need somebody on the opposite side, hopefully DeMarcus Walker can get something going, but also interior. I just want to see a lot more from somebody like Jarvon Dexter too coming up the middle.
There's no doubt. And I think that I'm excited to see those guys get opportunities. You know, I understand the appeal to a guy like Matt Judon when you consider where this team is, because it's tempting to look at the rest of your roster and think, oh man, if we get that other spot figured out, like we could really be cooking this year.
Yeah.
Like think about what that could mean for us this year. We can make the playoffs this year if they figure out that other pass rusher spot. And I think it's important to kind of take a step back and think about the big picture. Like, is it more important for Matt Judon to give you 7 sacks this year? Or is it more important for Austin Booker to get a decent amount of snaps and for you to figure out what he is in 2025 and 2026, rather than overpaying for a solution in the short term? And I like the fact that that's how they kind of handled the defensive tackle room last year. You know, for the most part, you know, Pickens and Dexter are getting those opportunities. You stumble into something with Andrew Billings. So I understand as a Bears fan having trepidation about how that group looks right now. But I think it's also important that, like, you're probably not winning the Super Bowl in 2024. Like, as tempting as that may be, I don't think that's the goal. So, like, let's understand and think about what this roster looks like next year and the year after, and not be too preoccupied with making sure you're fixing everything right now and paying a premium to do it.
Yeah. And I've had that conversation with like several people on Twitter, because there's some people out there that like Poles is win now. And I was like, the one thing, like, Ryan Poles wants to win now. But also, if you've learned anything from Ryan Poles in the last few years, in my opinion, Robert, is that he is patient. There's been many times where that first season, I think he had to throw some darts and take some chances when it comes, you know, to Chase Claypool and some of the things he kind of had to do that first year because they had no money and they had no draft picks and everything was kind of a disaster. Half the team was hit free agency when he took over, and it was just kind of a mess. But since then, everything to the point of Jalen Johnson last year, he said, go talk to people, go test the waters. Let's see if anybody offers you anything. And he was patient with that. And then what happens? Jalen Johnson gets a contract this offseason, even waiting for Rome. You know, there was all the videos. He wanted to move up and draft Rome Odunze. That's how much he wanted him. And him, Ian Cunningham, I think helps him a little bit of sit down. Let's like settle in a little bit. But there's patience level too, because I do think Ryan Poles saw and obviously experienced what a disaster it was when he took over, and he wants to be able to build this product that is not only for a year or two. And that's been the biggest problem with the Bears for a long time, is they have this successful 1 or 2 years because they put all their chips in, and Ryan Pace was really bad about that. Here's everything, let's just go for it and win now, but then you're screwed in the next, you know, 4 years later. And so that Absolutely. You talked about that on your NFC North. Yeah. And like you talked about that on your NFC North podcast too, where you said, you know, like kind of insinuating that you want this team to be built for the future. You don't want it to be a momentarily hey, let's get be good for 2 years, which I think they've done offensively, Robert, for the most part. I think we still got to figure out that offensive line, the future of that. But when it comes to weapons wise and Caleb, you have these guys locked in for 4 or 5 years. And so that's the positive. But now you want that to happen defensively, too.
There's no doubt. And I think that it's important to think about how young this team is. They were the third youngest team in the league last year. And if you look at most of the component pieces, you know, Keenan Allen's on the final year of his deal. For the most part, this is a young, young roster. And I think that you have to be considering what the next 2 years look like, not just what really the next 3 years, like 2025 and 2026. Because if you look at the core of the roster, a lot of those guys are still going to be around for that year. So building toward that moment, I think, is what needs to be something that you keep in mind, because this is not an aging team. This is not a team with a short window. This is a team that you'd hope has a long runway to make this work.
Yeah. And that's what's, like I said, fun, because I feel like we're not used to having that here. We're used to being like, all right, well, we could like make the playoffs this year, but I don't know what we're going to do next year. A few more before I let you go. Let's talk about the offensive line, because I think that when we're looking at it, most people are confident in Darnell Wright and what we saw last year, and that that's going to continue to prove. There's a little bit of split on Braxton Jones, but I do think we've seen Braxton Jones continue to develop. There's still things he needs to work on. Is he the left tackle of the future? I think we'll honestly have a better idea this year. Tevin has to stay healthy. He's one of the best guards in the NFL when he is healthy, but he has to stay there. He has to be able to be on the field to be that. I have a lot of concerns about Nate Davis. I just feel like he hasn't practiced. He can't stay healthy. There's so many issues there too. So that interior of the line is honestly still a bit worrisome to me.
There's absolutely. I mean, I think that that is, if I'm looking at one area on the offense that's the most concerning, it's what's happening at like center and right guard, and then even left guard, just because Tevin Jenkins has struggled to stay healthy. At his best, he's had some really impressive flashes, but this is a guy that, you know, you want to figure out what he is, because you got to make a contract decision sooner rather than later. And then what's happening at center and right guard, I think that the hope with a thing like the Ryan Bates trade is you give yourself options, right? You give yourself a chance to figure out, we just need two guys out of those three. And if we can have a solution there that we feel good about moving forward with, that's the best case scenario. So I hope that's it. Like, if Nate Davis isn't the guy, or Nate Davis struggles to stay healthy, do they have a contingency plan in Bates that can get them where they want to go? But I do think that that's an area where, when we get a little bit deeper into this, you know, a year from now, next offseason, when they have some money, they have some more draft picks, can you shore that up a little bit more than you have at this point? Because right now, I think you're just aiming for average. And is there a way at some point in the next calendar year to kind of seek out a higher ceiling at those spots?
Is there, like, they obviously spent a draft pick this year on Kyren Amagaji too. Do you think that he is there in case Braxton doesn't work out, or do you think he has some versatility to where if they needed to move him around, they could?
I think it's the former. Okay. I think that when you look at what you're paying tackles and what you're paying starting tackles, you know, drafting a guy who can be your swing tackle in the short term, you would hope. If we'll see by the end of this year, obviously he's been hurt, but you know, in 2025, if he can be your swing tackle, and then as you're having to make a decision on whether you want to pay Braxton Jones the Caleb McGarry contract, you know, $15 million a year, is it better to just go to the guy that you signed as a developmental prospect? So I think it's short-term insurance as a swing guy, and hopefully, you know, long-term, can he be somebody that can be a starting tackle for you? I assume that was the mindset when they went out and did that.
What does the running back room look like? You obviously, Swift is the number one, it looks like. Do you think that Rojo is going to be a type of, you know, the third and short downhill type guy? Do you think they'll use Khalil for that too? What is this looking like as we're heading into the
first? It's a great question. I don't know. Yeah. Like, I don't know how they're conceiving of it. Like, it feels to me like if I were a team that needed a running back, like, I would call about Khalil Herbert. All the guy's done is be efficient whenever he's gotten to touch the ball in the NFL, and he's going into the final year of his deal. So I'm surprised that there has not been more interest there. Like a team like the Colts, for example, the Colts need another running back. They do not have one that they can rely on right now. Is that a call that's worth making? To me, the answer is yes. So the fact that there hasn't been that sort of interest is a little bit surprising to me.
If Velus Jones, we have cuts within the day. I haven't been checking my phone, so I don't know if anything's been announced, but if Velus makes the roster, what do you think? Is it obviously four special teams? Are we going to see him in the run game a lot? Because we saw it a ton, especially this last preseason, and kind of thoughts on Velus and his last chance, what feels like with the Bears.
I assume it's going to be mostly as a returner. You know, the idea of seeing what he can do at running back is obviously, you know, it makes for good TV fodder, and I commend him for doing what he can to make the roster, but it really does feel like the best possible use of him is just going to be as a returner as the return rules change.
Yeah, I agree. And it'll be, I think every team's kind of figuring out these return rules too. So we'll see exactly how that goes. But Robert, let's go through a little bit. Your NFC North podcast dropped today. We mentioned that. So the Athletic Football Show, NFC North episode, run through a little bit the biggest standouts and maybe some worries for each of the other three teams in the NFC North.
The Lions are a complete team. The Lions are a contender for a reason. You know, they have a roster that does not have a lot of holes on it. To me, the biggest questions with them are what's the number two and number three receiver spots going to look like? You know, can Jameson Williams take that step forward? And then on defense, like the edge room, and they went out and got Marcus Davenport. He's struggled to stay healthy. But other than that, like they went out and got a ton of guys in the secondary. I think that they've really positioned themselves well there. And with Green Bay, the offense is probably going to be good. You know, they were a top five-ish offense near the end of last year. It was the youngest offense in the NFL. You know, their quarterback, I think, proved to be a real deal guy. They have some questions along the offensive line, but I think they deserve the benefit of the doubt. They've shown an ability to produce players at those spots. And I think the scheme does a lot of heavy lifting in allowing them to get by at those positions. And I think the other one would be, you know, the defense, the spine of the defense is just young, but I'm bullish on the defensive coordinator change that they've made there, getting the most out of that front. And in Minnesota, you know, well, it's a transition year. Like, obviously they have a lot of issues along the interior of the offensive line, interior of the defensive line, but they've got some pieces to fit what they want to do defensively a little bit better. And then on offense, you know, we'll see what they can get out of Sam Darnold and whether or not this actually is a spot that gets the most out of their quarterback as we kind of look forward and see what JJ McCarthy can be for them.
Yeah, and it's interesting. You said in yours, too, that you weren't expecting J.J. McCarthy to be playing anyways. I kind of said the whole thing. I figured their plan was to roll with Sam Darnold unless something crazy happened, an injury or something like that. But it is a little unfortunate for them because he does lose a year of development pretty much. He's not going to be able to practice and be out there with, you know, kind of learning everything. So that it's unfortunate in that sense. But at least, like you said, it already was this transition year for the Vikings. So yeah, it could be, it's so annoying that Green Bay just keeps doing it over and over again. But Robert, thanks for hopping on with me. I really appreciate it. I know you've got a lot going on. So what's your next thing coming up?
We got our division preview still rolling. So we're going to do, I think the AFC East is the one we're going to be recording for Thursday. So you can check those out wherever you get your podcasts on the Athletic Football Show.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Awesome. And you have a good rest of your week.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.